There are endless ways to measure the psychic health of any society, to see how they're doing. You can watch their television, read their newspapers and books, sit in cafes and listen to people, or you can ask certain central questions. And it seems to me that in some ways, no single question is more revealing of the nature of a society than to ask, who are its heroes? To whom do the people in this society look up? Whom do they admire? Heroism, which is not so often studied these days, used to be a major topic, especially in the 19th century. Thomas Carlyle wrote what was then a very influential book called Heroes and Hero Worship, in which he talked about the great world-altering heroes. Even his more sober American friend Emerson wrote a book called Representative Men, and they would write about Shakespeare and Goethe, and for a while Napoleon, before he fell out of favor, because these were great world heroes in a way, I think, that nobody can claim to be a world hero today. Everybody recognized that these were people of exceptional achievement and a special kind of character. Not perfect, because they were human beings, but as human beings go, quite extraordinary. It is not so easy today to find heroes. And yet, they are not less important. I mean, there is something of a debased currency to heroism. They are worth less than they used to be because the great heroes of the 20th century, or those who were worshipped as heroes, turned out, as often as not, to be horrible tyrants. The heroes of Europe, at least for a while, were not Churchill and Roosevelt, they were Hitler and Stalin. And so people are unused to the idea that they ought to have heroes to worship. But we can't escape it. We all worship in ways that make us uncomfortable. We all respond to symbolism and to achievement and to accomplishment. And the question, to some extent, is not, will you look up to someone? It's whom will you choose? And even more to the point, because it is revelatory of our own values, to whom do your children look up? Whom do they admire? Who are their heroes? Because children will, to some extent, imbibe, take in, unconsciously, the values of their parents. If you tell them that it is important to be good and to be ethical and to be kind, and they watch you every single day doing everything you can to make money, don't be surprised when their heroes are people who make a lot of money. Or when you tell them you really should get excited about learning and about issues and about ideas, and they see that the only time you ever jump up and down and scream is when you watch a basketball game, don't be surprised if their heroes are basketball players. This is not abstract, by the way. I recently had occasion to talk to a bunch of 10 to 12-year-old boys here at Sinai Temple, and I asked them, who's your hero? And they gave me a range of answers. An encouraging number of them said my mother or my father. But guess who came out number one? Kobe Bryant. He was first. More than mother and father, he edged out Moses. Now I grant you, they're 10-year-old boys. But they're also our children. And their answers are not trivial. And the values that they are getting from us, and us here is general. I don't mean that you come home and say, boy, do I admire Kobe Bryant. But from that which we allow them to be exposed to, the ideas that are uppermost in our homes, that which we talk about and they see us admire, they understand it. When they see that we accord more respect to someone who makes more money, is it surprising that they admire people who make a tremendous amount of money? When they realize that a 28 or 29-year-old athlete has the capacity to captivate our attention completely in the way that they don't, is it surprising that their heroes are 28-year-old athletes? When they know that you can interrupt anything except Dad's Sunday afternoon ball game, and that that is holy in the house, of course they want to be like the people who play basketball and football. Why shouldn't they? They're sacred to us. And when they're not worshiping sports figures, they've got music. And the people that they admire musically tend to be no more ethically admirable than the people they admire in sports. I will never forget, and I don't know where it came from, but when my daughter was 3.5 or 4 years old, we walked into a Tower Records, and there was a poster of Britney Spears, roughly as large as a city block, towering over Tower Records. And my daughter, to my chagrin, looked up at the poster and stared at it for a minute, and then she said, Daddy, did you see that girl over there? And I said, yes. She said, she's trying to pretend she doesn't need grown-ups, but she needs grown-ups. And I thought, may you never change. The problem isn't just that our society presents pop stars and athletes as heroes. It's that we don't present counterweights. At the dinner table, who do you teach them about that they can look up to? Who do they hear about? How many of us have sat at the dinner table with our children and told them the story of Theodore Herzl so that they might understand that we admire this person and know about this person as much as we know about the statistics of the latest box score, or as much as we know about the wheelings and dealings of the latest titan of business? If you don't do it, then of course they don't admire Theodore Herzl. You don't. They only hear about him in religious school. Why should they think that he's a hero? You learn the values of any group of people not by what they say, but by following them around, seeing what they give their energy and their excitement and their enthusiasm to. And that is, after all, what our children see. There is a downside to having heroes. Every hero that we have, as soon as we grow old enough or we learn enough, will disappoint us in some way. We will discover that they're not perfect. But heroes are intended to expand our notion of human possibility. To do things we didn't imagine could be done. I mean, Herzl is a good example. Basically, Theodor Herzl was nobody. He was nobody. He was a minor playwright and a journalist when he decided he was going to negotiate with heads of state all over the world to create Israel. And it was by sheer force of will and dint of personality that he became the person whom we remember. This, I submit to you, is far more worthy of admiration than learning how to throw a football. And the person you admire at age 10 is not irrelevant to the person you will be at age 50. The same parents who would do anything to make sure that their kids get into a school that will enable them to get into a good high school, so they can get into a good college, so that they can get a good job and make a good living, will do little or nothing to make sure at 10 they admire good people, so that they will learn to do good things. And have a good life. We say that that's what we want. But we don't teach it. Think, if you will, about the content of your conversations at breakfast and at dinner over the past months and years. You know, the rabbis say that the dinner table is a mishkan, it's an altar. And that no meal is supposed to pass without words of Torah. And words of Torah here can be very broadly construed. It doesn't mean you have to sit down at every meal and say, okay, what do you think about the parsha? But you have to talk about something more than Michael Jackson's trial. Because they hear the message. That matters. That's what my mother, my father spends her or his time thinking about, reading about, wondering about, is whether a popular singer did an abominable thing or not. That's the content of their lives. When you do that, you get a class full of kids who say, my hero is Kobe Bryant. And all of them know the particulars of his story. They're not naive. It's not because they don't understand. But because his skill on the basketball court overrides everything else. And some of them even apologize. Well, I know you won't like this, Rabbi, but really it's Kobe Bryant. To which I said, you're right, I don't like it. He's not a hero. He's a good basketball player. Now, that's not a hero. The Jewish tradition is built on heroes. None of them are perfect. Some of them did terrible things. But they become heroes by dint of the ethical striving of their lives, their attempt to be better, their attachment to God. Abraham and Sarah, Moshe, Devorah, Ruth, Miriam, David. All of them, in one way or another, both succeeded and failed. But they succeeded and failed in important things, not in trivial things. Remember, the great athlete in the Bible was named Goliath. That's what our tradition thinks of purely physical prowess. When you turn to Judaism and you ask, what is a hero? The rabbis give an explicit answer. Ezehu gibor, they ask. Who is a hero? Hakovesh et Yitzro. Somebody who has conquered themselves. That's a hero. Somebody who has made a friend of an enemy. That's a hero. In other words, heroism happens in the ethical and spiritual realm. We say that we believe it, but we don't teach it. Maurice Samuel, who was an English writer and thinker, wrote an autobiography. In the Thursday morning Torah class, those of you who are there, every Thursday morning at 8:15, free, everybody is welcome, conducted in English. I talked about Maurice Samuel. He wrote an autobiography called The Gentleman and the Jew. He grew up in England, and there he saw the image of the gentleman. The gentleman is sort of the adventure hero. He gets into sword fights. He's always got a clever remark on his lips. Life and death are nothing to him. Battle is what to expect. And it was a very seductive, a very attractive, a very powerful image to Samuel when he was growing up. But he said, I had a counter image. The counterimage was the Jew. All around me there were these Jews who were running from place to place, laden with cares and sorrows and books and tradition, backs bent from service to God. And when I was young, he said, my heart was drawn, of course, to the image of the gentleman, but as I got older, I began to see that the moral gravity, the real center of the world, was in the Jew. So what is it that we teach our children to admire? Who do we present to them as images of emulation, people they should be like when they get older? Samuel's gentlemen or his Jews? It is a noble and important task to seek to become the kind of person that you want your children to be. All of us hope that to some degree we are what it is we hope for our own children, but it is a big burden to want your child to grow up to be like you. And so it is our responsibility for ourselves and also for them to see models of human beings that we would like them to be like. I remember when Ilan Ramon died in the Challenger disaster. For a moment, for a brief moment, all of our school was swept up in the heroism of his trying to do something remarkable and noble and doing it as an Israeli and as a Jew. It was quite something. And by the way, not unusual, because epic heroes, that is, heroes in the Iliad, the Odyssey, and epic literature almost always become heroes in part by dying a noble death, by seeking to do something remarkable. But I wonder how many of them still think of him. How many remember him? Or if he has been crowded out of their circle of admiration by a basketball player. We're coming up on Purim, when they will very briefly think of Esther and Mordechai. And then Pesach, when they will remember Moses. Let's teach them that these are heroes. That heroes are people we want to be like. That it ultimately doesn't matter whether Mordechai was rich or Moses could sing. It matters that they aimed for noble things, that they didn't give up, that they cared for other human beings, that they reached towards God. And then we can say to our children, and I hope as you get older, that will be true of you as well. Shabbat Shalom.